Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight number 146, recording on Monday, the 13th of December, 2010. I'm Steve Litchfield, and up in hell I have...
David Gilson.
And leaving him till last, as always I have...
Well, it's, you know, those say leave the best to last, but Rafe's not here, which means I'm second last. Hello, it's you in here.
Yeah, we're hoping to have Rafe on the call. He seems to have disappeared, but he's got a few things he wants to talk about, so we will try and dial him up halfway through. A few items of news, a few items of discussion. First of all, Google's YouTube client has been updated to work with Symbian 3. You may have seen this on the site, and definitely seems to be an increase in quality as well. YouTube do seem to have a variety of different mobile streaming formats and quality of bitrate. They serve up quite a high quality version on things like the iPhone and certainly on the Android devices. It's very, very high quality. It used to be pretty low grade quarter VGA low bitrate stuff on Symbian. That's now been improved. If your original source video that you're looking at on YouTube and is now HD or, you know, a decent bitrate, a decent resolution, then the new YouTube client, which is version 2.4.10, get it from m.google.com, that will serve you up a higher quality version in the client on the Symbian 3 devices and probably on the original S65th edition devices as well, although you may not quite get the same frame rate. So highly recommended. Go and get it, the Google YouTube client. David, you've got a big update to Skype as well.
Yes, it's some exciting news if you've got a Symbian 3 phone. Skype has released a new client which is compatible with all the Symbian 3 devices. They've also updated the user interface. It's much more pleasing to look at and use. Personally, I found it easier to actually find the chat rooms because we've got our little All About Symbian virtual office, so it's easier for me to catch up with what's going on when I'm not at the computer. We found one little bug with the proximity sensors in the Symbian 3 client, but... the proximity sensor wouldn't actually kick in. So when you put a phone close to your face, it would actually accidentally touch one of your on-screen buttons. So
at random, I guess, depending on the shape of your cheek, you could hang up, you could end the call, you could do
anything.
Yes. Surprise.
Yes, if you've got like a strangely shaped face, who knows what could happen.
Also brand new on Symbian 3, in this case absolutely definitely just for Symbian 3 because it needs the graphics acceleration, is Real Golf 2011 HD. It's certainly available on the Nokia N8 now as a free download. Nokia have licensed it from Gameloft. It appears in SW update on the N8 and also via the OviSuite update. David, you've got the C7. I don't suppose it's appeared for the C7, has it?
I haven't looked. I shall load up the App Store and get back to you.
Yeah, you look while I talk about the game. So it essentially Gameloft has produced Real Golf 2011 for most of the mobile platforms. It's a pretty sumptuous, fairly realistic golf simulation. They don't try and gamify it too much. You get a pretty realistic swing, the standard of three-tap method, but some pretty good 3D rendered scenery. Each hole takes about 15 seconds or so to load, which is bad because it's slow, but it's good because it loads an awful lot of scenery, an awful lot of 3D terrain, so that once you're actually in the hole, in it, it's really quite realistic. Say, for example, your ball lands in a bunker. When you actually arrive in that bunker, rather than just being in a sort of a yellow or a white patch of a circle on the ground, which is what I did in my old fairway game back in the day, you're actually literally in a bunker and you're looking up at the edge of the bunker and have to chip it over the edge to see get to the hole, which you can't necessarily see. So there's an awful lot to do in this game. Real Golf 2011 HD, it's completely free. It is for the N8. David, do you know yet whether it's for the C7?
It isn't. I've just searched for Golf and Real Golf in the Obvistar app on my C7, and it is not there.
Okay, if your homework while you and chat's about the next item is to look in the SW update and see if it's in there as well. Ewan, there was some updates for Nokia messaging and mail for exchange. Are these brand new to the 5800, the 5530, and X6, or are they updates?
They are updates, yes. And just to check back once, the Real Golf isn't out for the C601 either. So. Okay. For everybody who's listening, who's a developer, remember to tick all the boxes, please. For people who are listening from Nokia's OviStore, please, please, please have an option that says should be compatible, can't guarantee it, have a gamble anyway. We all know that there's Symbian Hat 3 devices that they should go. You know it, I know it. You've got one silly certification problem holding this up. It's making you look stupid. Right then. back to Nokia Messaging and Mail for Exchange. Yep, as Steve Riley pointed, these are updates, and these are specifically for the 5th edition devices. I love talking about these in the podcast because it's impossible for Steve to edit my words. So Nokia 5800, 5530, and the X6 as well. Essentially, this brings Nokia's messaging clients up to date on these platforms. If you think of all the things that you would expect to find in the mail solution in a 21st century phone, this is what you would get. It's not advanced. It doesn't have anything super new or shiny. But what it does do is it does do it well. It has the push email equivalent. It allows you to talk both to Mail for Exchange and your Microsoft Exchange servers, but also to use online services like the OviMail, Gmail, and Yahoo, and use them as if they were push email services. You can also set you can't have push. I tend to leave my phone set up so it checks every 15 minutes or so. Email's urgent, but not that urgent to get through for me. There's a tiny, tiny gotcha. Make sure you have a SIM card when you start this up so it can provide you the right services. It, for some reason, decides to check your location from the SIM card and not from, oh, I don't know, the built-in GPS. Because that would be too easy, wouldn't it? But these are more than functional. I think faint praise would say that these applications are above average, but not by much more than that. It said they handle HTML emails reasonably well. The font size, you can't really scale it that much. You still have to go back to the old input methods.
Is it fair to say, Ewan, that Nokia Messaging and Mail for Exchange for Symbian, they've both been updated so many times over the last couple of years. I think it's probably fair to say that they're now mature and fairly bug-free.
I think that would be fair, but and again, with everything else, they don't look updated. They just look workmanlike. It's like having it's like having a Vauxhall Viva and putting in an engine from a Ford Capri inside it. It's like, well, that's going to be really powerful, but it still looks like something your granddad would drive. So, I mean, I'm not impressed. The thing is, I've never really been impressed with any of the email clients on the Symbian handsets. I really, personally, I use them more for viewing. I very rarely reply. I will wait till I get home to a full size PC to have the width of the screen and the full keyboard. And I fully take on board that is just me in this respect. People who are using email day in and day out on the handset while they're on a train into work, while they're walking around London or the big cities doing that stuff, will probably have a much better view of how this application runs. For me, my commute is from the kitchen when I finish my porridge, past the coal bunker nowadays because of the weather, and into the office, light the fire, and get onto the keyboard. So it's really more a, let's just check stuff when I'm upstairs doing the daily essentials, keeping an eye on things. It's nice to have. It works, but it doesn't make you feel wow.
And yeah, and just a little comment I wanted, it's a personal anecdote with this, always throwing up, and kind of something I've mentioned on the podcast a few times is that the continuing saga of getting my mum into the smartphone world. I've got a set up with a Fit 513 with, and I've installed this, and It's great to have the Mail for Exchange sync on here, because what I would like to do for like minimal technical support requirements on my part is to have all the like the address book and emails updating automatically, so I don't have to remind her to like run SyncML with it's from MO2 service I've got people in my family using, but. I know from experience of like the E72 free, for example, even the Mail for Exchange support with Google is not bug-free, and I've had to resort to using New Eversync, which works around those problems. And I haven't tried it on the 55 yet, but I'm kind of expecting it's going to be the same code base. So Steve was saying about maturity. I think the Mail for Exchange support still isn't there, although I would like to be proved wrong.
I'm calling Rafe again. He will now appear when I count to three. One, two, three. And he's there. Hi, Rafe.
Hi, Steve.
There we are. You can enjoy the fun of editing what we've just done. I would just take a few notes about the updates we just mentioned. the network requirement, Ewan, I think it's kind of, it's not just to get the location, rough location of where you are in the world for setting up the appropriate servers. I think it's also that they actually check the network you're on, because there may be some network specific settings for Nokia messaging. So there are reasons for acquiring a SIM, certainly that first setup time. And the same also applies, I think, for Ovi Maps to some degree, which is fair enough. And
I'll give them that on one thing, that they put up a little dialogue box saying not all email services available, SIM card not inserted, because there's no feedback at this point. When you go in and you have no SIM card, like I do when I'm doing a trial device first time, it just gives you mail for exchange. If it gives me mail for exchange and please insert SIM card for other mail services, that's far better on user interface and far better for new users, and it should be there. That if something is being hidden from you, you should know why.
Absolutely, absolutely, I agree. News item on the Symbian website closure, scheduled to happen in a few days' time as we record this. Rafe, you had some more news.
Yes, this is just an update to let people know that the code and various other bits and pieces, including the database for the wiki, the forums, as well as, I believe, the bug list, are actually going to be available via FTP very shortly. So that means that people who want to get access and will be able to straight away. There'll be no waiting around for the DVD in February. So I think that's a big improvement, and you can get that, I believe, by emailing contact@symbian.org, but the details are on the Symbian website, and we'll make sure we put them in the show notes as well. One of the nice things they've done in this package is they're going to make it available as a virtual machine. So this means if people want to effectively create a local copy of things like the media, the wiki, which is a media wiki installation, as well as the forums, which I believe is vBulletin, they'll actually be able to run copies of those on their machine. So they won't just get the database, they'll get the necessary bits to run everything in a virtual machine. So effectively that's a local copy of the websites. There are going to be some omissions from that, including things like use email addresses for privacy and security reasons. It's fairly obvious. There'll also be some missing files which can't be included for licensing and legal reasons. And that includes something within the Symbian platform itself. There are still some libraries, I believe they're binary executables, that are licensed by third parties, and they can't be freely distributed. But it's sort of an ongoing pattern. So in terms of the changes from last time around, when we said it would be disappearing and we weren't sure what the access was going to be, it is now going to be accessible. And I think for developers, i.e. those who are really interested in having continuing access to the thing, it's going to be relatively easy. And so it's good to see that the staff at the Symbian Foundation have, you know, put something in place before things shut down on the 17th of this month, which is, I guess, the end of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. Next news item, there's a petition to get the Amazon Kindle ebook software on Symbian. David?
Yes, this is, I'm going to make an impassioned plea. This is actually something that I've been tweeting at Amazon Kindle. Take that down in your notes, folks. I've been making a plea at them several times on Twitter that we really should have a Kindle app for the Symbian platform. And independently of me, a blogger who I've linked to on All About Symbian and All About Migo before, who goes by the name of @smartphonefan, and that's spelled with all Fs, has started an online petition to get people to sign up. And when I last checked, I think we were just over 200 signatures. As of last night, it was only 13 signatures, although I wrote a little news story about it this morning, and people have taken it up and been quite enthusiastic with it, and also been tweeting at Amazon Kindle as I asked them to. Why I think this is important is because the ebook market is taking off. It's going to be big money, and apart from hardware readers, there are mobile applications. The Android and iOS have Kindle applications, and you can sync your book collection with them. And I think this is a brilliant thing. Not everyone wants to read books on phones. I get that, but we should have the option. And since I've had an Android phone in house, I mean, I've really enjoyed like buying books and reading away. And when I don't have the Android phone around, I miss that. And Symbian is the biggest smartphone platform on earth. Kindle, I think we can safely say, is probably has at least got the biggest mind share. So Amazon, if you're listening, please get us a Symbian application. Listeners, please go and find the story on allaboutsymbian.com and follow the link to sign the petition.
Yeah, I agree with David here. I'd love to see Kindle running on the Symbian platform. I've actually got one of the Kindle ebook readers, and it's a really great device. And people often ask, well, you wouldn't really want to read a book on your phone. And the answer to that is, well, some people do, but I think a bigger proportion of people would actually use it every now and then. So for half an hour on the train, or times when they may not bring their ebook reader with them, or, you know, the odd moment when you've got some spare time. And the big point about Kindle is it has something called Whisper Sync. And so you can open a book on one device, read to a certain page, and then it will sync automatically in the background. You'll open it up on your phone or another device. I mean, it's also available for sort of Windows, iPhone, and Android, as David mentioned there. And it, when you open it on that other device, it will be at that same page immediately. So it's, you know, it saves, if you like, the session between devices, which I think technology will see more of in the future in terms of for things like watching videos. But obviously for something like a book, it makes an enormous difference. And so, you know, it's not just about reading a whole book. It may be reading part of a book. But I think it's worth making a point here about Amazon in general. I've actually thought for quite some time that Amazon would be a fairly good strategic partner for Nokia to sign a long-term agreement with. And eBooks is one example of that. But there's also Amazon Unbox, which is their video store. And actually, Matt Miller from Nokia Experts, as well as the ZDNet Mobility blog, has written some really great posts on how you can use Amazon Unbox videos on the Nokia devices. And they are DRM protected, but you know, being able to access that video store, at the moment you can do it if you know what you're doing, but it's not very obvious. Nokia, you know, could pick that up, make it a bit more obvious. I think the clash would obviously come over the music store. Nokia would want to continue their activities in Ovi Music. But outside of that, you know, in video, in ebooks, and I think potentially the shopping client, Nokia could do very well strategically align with Amazon. So imagine if, you know, they also came up with applications around shopping, for example. You know, you could scan a barcode with your phone and go and buy that item on Amazon, or see the price differences and things like that. And Amazon is one of those well-known stores that does have good prices. But more importantly, it's actually quite widely geographically spread, which for Nokia is going to be important because they do target a large market. And obviously it's biggest in the States, but it does have a very big presence in Europe. And I think that could be an interesting differentiator. So I would like to see it more than just Kindle. I'd like to see Amazon and Nokia working closer together, because I believe it would be in their mutual interest to do so. Because in a lot of other places, Amazon will be competing with, say, the iPhone on, you know, books, music, and video as well. And equally, you could look at the Microsoft or some of the other ebook comparisons, and Google as well have their own ambitions in ebooks, and maybe as well in music, and certainly in content. They're not such a clash, but I think there may be a better strategic fit between Nokia and Amazon, particularly with the stance they've been taking recently, where they're keener on partnering. And potentially, you know, you think about this shopping example that I came up with. You know, imagine that if that was shipping on every Nokia device, and even if only, say, 1 in 100 people bought something on Amazon through that, if it was, say, a 10% commission rate, we're talking maybe, you know, $1, $2 over the life cycle of a phone in terms of affiliate fees for Nokia, but that $1 or $2 could make a big difference to profit margins. So I think it's one that's, you know, I could talk more about this, but I won't. Just a thought to extend on David's impassioned plea for a Kindle client on Symbian.
It's also interesting to note that Amazon have hinted in the past that they're looking at doing their own application store for Android devices.
They've confirmed that they're doing it.
They have confirmed that. So, you know, there is that there again. Amazon are moving into these spaces. I think the question here is, of course, is what to do about dilution. Nokia's Ovi brand, you know, some of the stronger elements in Ovi are replicated in Amazon. The music store is the obvious one. Amazon's probably the biggest MP3 platform after iTunes, all told, and Nokia's Ovi music store is the biggest, I think, or the second biggest on a mobile platform.
Biggest on the mobile platform, and in quite a number of countries, it's now the leading digital download. So I think you're right in saying iTunes, Amazon, and now Nokia Music Store globally are the three biggest stores. I'd have to go back and check on that, because it depends how you define things. But yes, sorry, point well made, Ewan.
so from the obvious answer is that, oh, well, you could be competing with each other on quite a few areas. I think a lot of this will depend on what Stephen Ellop wants to do with Nokia. I think a year ago, if we'd asked this, we'd be like, oh, they're not going to go to Amazon. They're just going to go out and do it on their own. But now they're, you know, under new management. It will be interesting to see where these partnerships and tie-ins go. I've been a great believer in ebooks on devices since the Palm 3 days. And you know, I'm still creaking along with a version of Mobi Pocket Reader, even on the C601. And I would love to see the Kindle Store. It's a natural, but you know, it is a separate ecosystem because your Kindle on iPhone works on Kindle, or Kindle works on Kindle on PC. So adding in another device isn't, you know, it's part of Amazon's strategy. It is an obvious hole in Nokia's OV lineup. So it makes a certain sort of black and white sense, but you know, that's not how businesses make decisions. But partnerships and workings together are a black arcane art to themselves. And while I'm fully behind this petition, maybe it's already in the plans for announcement. I don't know, at certain events in mid-February. I don't know. It just remains to be seen.
And one last thing I'll just add, just to make good on the promise that I made in the news article this morning. Steve and I have already signed, so Rafe and Ewan, can I count on your support?
you certainly can count on my support. And just to add, there is one ebook reader that's just come to my attention that's out there on the market, which is the EPUB format. That's not what Amazon uses, but we'll include that in the show notes as well, because it's a nice bit of freeware originally available on MIMO, now just coming onto Symbian as well, and that's the Dorin ebook reader. But I'll include more on that in the show notes.
Yeah, show notes URL is, of course, just allaboutsymbian.com, and follow your nose for the appropriate news story, or look under media and you'll find it. Moving on, my grid, my smartphone choosing grid, which I've been running for a few years now, I've done a big update, added a lot of the current competing devices and some of the latest Symbian 3 devices. You can find it yourself at stevelitchfield.com, as it sounds. Don't forget the T in Litchfield, and then add on /grid.hdm. So stevelitchfield.com/grid.hdm. And as a few data points, I thought I'd ask the three guys on the podcast with me what the grid chose for them when they plugged in their preferences. Which smartphone? David, you first.
Well, Steve, I'm in shock.
how accurate it was.
Okay, next.
we all know about me and the E72, and that didn't even come as a runner-up. What actually won out for me was the N8, and the runner-up, second place, was the C7, which I fortunately have at hand right now. But apparently, the N8 is the right phone for me, according to the grid. So, guys, anyone want to swap?
Ewan, what did it choose for you?
It's strangely enough, Steve, it's come up with the N8 and the C7 for me as well. Oh, there's going to be accusations of bias here. Firstly, for me, because the C601 isn't on this device. But also, of course, you know, it's 30 options with 3 winnings on each option. So I think we need to clear that it's a piece of guidance. It's not a piece of accurate. It's a piece of fun guidance, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, before we, I completely have to try and justify myself. Rafe, what did it choose for you?
Well, actually, it chose the Nokia C7 for me as the winner and the Nokia N8 as the runner-up, although it was pretty close.
I can hear them now. They're all typing, oh, what do you expect from a Symbian site?
But as I say, it was pretty quick in that, just looking down the list here, some of the ones coming in quite close with the Motorola Defy, and perhaps, no surprise, the Apple iPhone 4 as well. I was quite surprised to see the Nokia X6 quite high up the list. Having used that for a while, I can say I don't really like it, but that's probably more of a subjective comment, the feel in the hand, just the look and design of it. It's a perfectly competent handset, of course, but that's a very personal thing. So what this grid probably doesn't take into account is that kind of X factor, if you like, that when you pick up a device, you know, you do tend to have some kind of subjective relationship with it. Oh, that sounds like a dating show, doesn't it? But you know, it doesn't take that, but I was quite impressed that it did come up with the C7 and the N8, which I find very difficult to choose between. But I might suggest, Steve, there may be just a slight bit of Symbian bias in here, I don't know.
Yeah, just to justify myself slightly, there is an inherent bias in the sense that I chose the categories themselves, and the very... functions that I included are by very nature slightly influenced by my history in the Symbian world. It's functions which I've expected devices to do, to see whether they do them or not. Now, some of those functions I've included, some of the other platforms don't actually do very well, if at all, which means that there is a slight bias in that regard. And if someone who was, you know, a real Android fan or a real iPhone fan was setting up the grid, they would probably choose different categories and we get different results. But that part, I do believe my scores are fairly objective.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's an implication for me to do an impression of Scylla from Blind Date, but I'm not going to go there. Also interesting. Yes, you're welcome. It's interesting that ITC, that you still don't have any of the Windows 7 mobile smartphone Windows portable devices up here yet.
Yeah, it wouldn't fit in the box because the name was too long. No. I have had a try of the HD7 and it's just nowhere near ready for mission critical use yet. I'll add it probably in January or February. Microsoft, I need to get a couple of major updates out the way before I can recommend any of the Windows Phone 7 devices for anyone. Rafe, you had a comment.
Yeah, just to add to the Windows Phone 7 thing, I've had a try with one as well. I think it's very much dependent on what you do with your phone, which rather reflects what Steve was saying earlier about the categories. As far as I know, Steve, with your calculation, the way it works, there's no weighting with one category over the other either. So, of course, in a lot of cases, there'll be one category that outweighs all the others as far as people are concerned. And you've got a little bit of that by having not quite and very in your sort of breakdown classification here. But I know, for example, that some people will prize battery life above anything else, or prize access to, you know, the a particular app store, or, you know, it's that fashion element where, well, I want to have this phone rather than this phone, and I will put up with a little bit of extra inconvenience just so I can have the phone I desire, you know, be that bit more fashionable or whatever. So it's always difficult coming up with a computational matrix for this, but I do agree that Steve does a fantastic job here rating them all round and sort of looking at the various elements. But you know, so for anyone who wants to go and have an idea of what they like, I think probably what a lot of people will find is that a Symbian device will come out well for them, because when they sit down and say, yes, I'd like to do this on my phone, the versatility and the diversity of Nokia's phones in particular have always been very impressive indeed. But counterweighing that is a lot of time at the moment people say to me, oh, I don't want to buy a Nokia phone, essentially because it's not cool, or I don't see it as, you know, something fitting in with my image, which I think is rather a shame, is perhaps a more objective approach that effectively you are forced to take by filling in this grid will probably serve people better in the long run. And, you know, a lot of the comments around Nokia seem to be the UI isn't intuitive or easy to use, and we, you know, debated this one back and forth before, and often said that I think really this is a case of people want to try out something new. But I won't get into that debate. Go and try it out yourself, and let us know what suggestion Steve's grid comes out with. And for those who want to go and try it right now and can't be bothered to read the show notes, you can get it from stevelitchfield.com/grid.htm.
Thanks for the plug, Rafe. And just today, the two of the functions stroke categories were double weighted, and I declare that on the page. That was size and weight, and screen size and resolution, all with double weight. I thought that was fair enough. Those are the two big overriding things that probably affect most people apart from price. I did actually take the price element off the grid. I mean, that, I had that for a while, but apart from the fact the prices kept changing and I kept changing the scores, most people, of course, will go say, which is the device that's perfect for me, and then worry about, okay, how do I afford it? What's the best way to buy it? Which I thought was fair enough.
Yeah, and after all, you've got them ranked in order, so you won't necessarily pick the top one. You'll go, right, I mean, looking at my results, perfect example, both the C7 and the N8. In my case, the C7 came out on top, and I'd certainly choose that over the N8 on a price basis. So, you know, people can still have to make their own choice. Steve can't tell you which phone to buy exactly, but he does his best.
Indeed. Moving on, David, there's been a big update to Pixelpipe Send and Share. Is it in the Obvi store yet, this update, or is it just available from Pixelpipe?
It's only available from Pixelpipe at the moment. It's in with the Obvi store for approval, so it'll be a few weeks. So probably this time next month, the version 1.03 will be available in the Obvi store. If you haven't updated Pixelpipe for a while, the most significant changes, as noted in our news item about it, you can get prompted for uploads after a capture of photos or videos. You can set a scaling factor so that photos can be scaled down to upload faster. There's even an option for a zero-click upload, so you don't get prompted at all. Whenever you take a photo or a video, it will just get sent up to a service of your choice. We'll say, don't really don't try doing this at home, folks, with public services. Do it for something private like an FTP server or your Dropbox account. And also that they say they've put in notifications for over-the-air updates. And also, none of this will come as a surprise to anyone who's been beta testing Pixelpipe, which is probably a select member of our audience. Although Brett Butterfield and co have been sending out regular updates of Pixelpipe for quite a while, although what they said in their last email when they sent out the last build was, we've decided not to pre-release betas ongoing and we'll only be introducing them to testers just in advance of release. This is the only build you can expect to see for some time now. We hope you love it. And it is, it's very good, and I'm using it all the time.
There we go, recommendation. Rafe, you had a comment.
Yeah, just to say, I think Dave might be being a bit pessimistic about saying it'll take a month to get through OviStore quality assurance. I suspect the reason he said this is a while back Nokia said that they were having to increase the time that apps would go through OviStore quality assurance, and that was basically because of the level of applications being submitted. At the moment, it's averaging out at about 10 days to 2 weeks, so I would have thought that will follow for Pixelpipe, and it does tend to be a bit quicker, I think, for existing applications. Certainly the pattern I've seen doing some of this myself, it tends to be between 10 and 14 days. But pretty encouraging news to see Pixelpipe continuing to update. The only thing, of course, is if you've installed this via the OviStore, you'll actually need to uninstall it before you can install the update. And Nokia, please get the OviStore update mechanism fixed. But also it's good news in the from the sense that there's quite a few applications on the way into OviStore, and I've seen a number go through recently, or developers have got in touch to let me know about them. I think the pre-Christmas and post-Christmas period is going to be a pretty good period to be owning a Symbian device. There's going to be some well-known applications arriving on the platform, and in fact, it's already started in the last week. We've been reviewing some of them on the site, but there's a lot more to come. So keep an eye on the site, and we'll keep you updated on the latest and the best applications being added to OviStore.
Yeah, when I was asking the guys at the OviStore about this issue of updating apps, they said there was no clear guidelines, and that many applications, they did note, did actually check for updates themselves over the air with the developers' servers, which is a fairly good way of going. But I agree with you, there needs to be a central OviStore update, at least awareness as well, and some sort of indication on the page that you can tap this to uninstall and reinstall the update or something along those lines. So yes, please.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the Apple process, there's an update all button. And I actually find one of the frustrations of using both the iPhone and the iPad is that there are application updates coming out all the time, and trying to keep up to date with them is an experience and annoyance, especially given the way that the device not shuts down when you're doing application updates, but certainly becomes slow enough that it becomes unusable. Yeah. So I tend to just, you know, connect it, set update all, and come back a couple of hours later. So
especially if, like me, you've installed a couple of flight simulators and the latest Rage 3D shooter, which totals something like 1.5 gigabytes between them, and they've fixed a few bugs, and that's another 1.5 gigabytes. Thank you very much. That's very frustrating.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'd like to actually see something a bit more intelligent than that. So I think this just goes to show there's a lot more that can be done to improve the user experience of app stores beyond the basics. And in all fairness to OviStore, you know, over the last 2 years, they've gone from what was a pretty poor client to something, especially on the Symbian 3 devices, that now works very well. But in terms of application updates, it is on their sort of roadmap. It is being worked on. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see something about that around February time at Mobile World Congress, if not before.
Okay. I'd like to finish on a discussion point, if I may. Guys, I wrote a piece about a week or so ago talking about home screens on these new Symbian devices. And obviously with their 65th edition, we had one home screen and all was well. And everything was hunky-dory. Then with Symbian 3, we suddenly got three home screens. And some of us are wondering what on earth to put on them. Should you indeed fill all three? I wrote my piece was arguing, basically, that the home screen should be at a glance view of your life. And that if you have to swipe around left, right, trying to find icons, that it rather defeats the point. So, more data points. David, how many home screens do you use?
I've actually settled on two, which is, and coincidentally, I've seemed to have settled on using two in Android as well. My main primary screen on the C7, it's from the top, we've got the time and date widget, a calendar widget, which was the standard calendar widget, but now I'm using something called Coming Next. Go to the site and read a review, everybody. Yeah. And then I have the notifications widget, so I know when I've got a call or a text message. Then I have my mail for exchange widget. Then I have my music controller. And then I have four applications: messaging, Gravity, Podcatcher, and web. And then just on the second page, I've just got just things that I want quick access to, but I don't always need to be looking at, which we've got a row of icons. I've got three games plus a link to the gaming folder, and then another shortcut widget with three apps and a link to the applications folder. And then I've got the Google search box and the battery indicator widget as well. I might, when I'm taking this out in the field, and say if I want access to like a calculator and maps for when I'm outside, I may add more to the second screen, or I might make a third screen just for like when I'm going out in the field, kind of similar to how you had the two home modes on S63rd edition feature pack 2. So yeah, two home screens.
Yeah, of course, when Rafe takes his device out in the field, it literally is out in the field. Rafe lives out in the country, which has a whole different meaning to the phrase. But actually, Rafe, can we come to you next on that one? How many home screens do you use?
Well, I use three home screens, and I would probably use more if I could. But I think the point you make is actually quite well made, because effectively my first home screen is the at-a-glance home screen and quick access to the most popular applications. So I've actually got two row of application shortcuts. Then I've got the sort of battery monitor widget, and then below that is my email, and below that is the notification widget for, you know, incoming text messages, missed calls, etc. Moving on to the second and third screen, it tends to change as, you know, a news one, weather widget, social networking, calendar, and then quick access to music. On the third one at the moment, I've got some more news ones, as well as one of the iPlayer ones and the sort of Google search widget. But those tend to be different ways to access functionality on the device. And this is sort of where you can talk about how the home screen has evolved from being something that was effectively, in the very early days, just quick access to very few key functionalities. But it was still very much necessary to go into the main application launcher. And then that kind of evolved where we started getting widgets on home screens, and it became much more about at-a-glance information plus the basic shortcuts. But I think now home screens have sort of evolved towards almost being an infinitely customizable, the application launcher, basic user interaction place, to the extent that, you know, some people I see using these phones don't move off the home screen at all. You know, they don't go into the application launcher. And certainly, you know, that was the way that Symbian 4 was intended to move. And I think you see this more clearly on some of the MIMO devices, and maybe the Android devices, where, you know, you have home screens, in some case with custom software, it's up, down, left and right, or 12 home screens and things like that, which is sort of an infinitely expandable canvas onto which you can drop application shortcuts, bookmarks, widgets, whatever it happens to be, to create kind of a very customized thing. And so it is noticeable that my second and third home screens on the phone are much more in that kind of mold, and moving away from what I've always thought of as the traditional home screen, which is, as you say, at a glance information. So I think it depends what you're using it for.
Yeah. Ewan, if I was to ask you, would you just say, no, Steve, I use a Filofax, or what do you use for your home screen on the C6?
Gosh darn, I'll go to my second piece of paper then, shall I? Look, okay, let's be clear here. I have one home screen because I just cannot fathom why. Well, actually, I can fathom why. Android needs to have these multiple home screens because their application picker is absolutely useless. This massive, unsortable list of people, of stuff. You know, Android users have to have these home screens so they can find their applications.
Absolutely.
Symbian, we can sort stuff and move it into folders. So in actual fact, my home screen are the 12 icons that are in the same, that I put in the same place on every phone I have, and it's off the system button. So that's application store, Gravity, folder for internet, maps, folder for media, mail messaging, Mobi Pocket Reader, Opera Mini, folder for PDA stuff, and folder for tools. That's what I consider to be my home screen. It's in a part of the application launcher. What I call the standby screen, which is what everybody else calls a home screen, which is the one that has the time, the favorite context, the notifications, and four icons, because in Symbian 3 I can't change the two soft keys as well. It's interesting to note that the main screen that we've all talked about here on the actual home screens, we've all got roughly the same things on them. My big problem with all of this is, it's nice that we've moved to widgets. It's nice that we can program for that. But fundamentally, they're just shortcuts that don't carry enough information. For example, if I look at the mail widget that goes on the home screen, I have a mail that says Digital S, the DS Euro. I mean, it actually means nothing about what you think it would actually mean, because it doesn't show enough information. There's no configuration options on there. There's nothing to say, only show me that most important emails only show me things from one of the groups that I have in the contacts application. It's nice it's here, but really the Symbian home screens feel reactionary because other platforms have them, and Symbian felt that the Symbian UI felt the need to have these put in.
I think I'm just going to have to jump in and defend Symbian to an extent there. I think
yes, please do.
Nokia
please.
Was actually one of the innovators of home screens right back on the early device, like the N95. It has obviously evolved a lot since then. And I think the point about you made about Android application launch is probably fair, but there are now versions of Android phones that are much better in that terms than it is noticeable. If you look at people using those phones, you know, they do tend to cut down on the number of home screens they're using. But you know, this idea of the home screen has evolved incredibly over the years, you know, from being something quite basic to something that's you know, attuned a lot more. And one of the things I do like about the widgets is you can make them, you know, customize it to be to your particular style. But I would agree with you, there's definitely room for improvement in terms of defining how information is displayed. But I think that's not so much a problem with home screen as the design of the widgets themselves and some of the limitations imposed. So, you know, looking forward to the future, what I'd like to see is, you know, which was proposed in Symbian 4, so I suspect we may well see on future Nokia devices, is less limitation around what size they have to be. At the moment, it's, you know, rectangles, which to a certain extent does make quite a nice degree of order. But when you're moving towards multiple home screens, a bit more customization, be it double height widgets or something like that, would be welcome. And I think I wouldn't go as far as the sort of the HTC Sense style, where often you'll have a widget taking up an entire page of the home screen, because frankly, I don't see much point in that. Make it an application if you're going to go that far. But there's certainly room for more flexibility, and I think that would cut through a lot of the problems you're describing there, Ewan.
Yeah. If you want to see the original article, Rafe will put the URL in the show notes, so just click on that and you can read my original thoughts and also what's on my home screen, and you can see the comments, maybe add some more comments onto there. We're right out of time, guys. I'm glad we've managed to catch up with you, Rafe. You can find our Twitter accounts and find out what we're getting up to day by day by going to Rafe Blandford, David Gilson, Steve Litchfield, or just Ewan on Twitter, and there's also the main AAS account. There's also even a Facebook group for All About Symbian. Do go and look at that. All About Symbian is where you can catch up with us. Goodbye from now from me. Goodbye up in hell from
David Gilson. Bye-bye.
And goodbye from Rafe.
Goodbye, everybody.
And goodbye up in Scotland.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Who's going to close his file of acts and move back to the smartphone?
Move into the sunset.
Yes. Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
I do hope someone was recording this.
Oh, I knew there was something I meant to do.
No!